You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Dr. Nina Show. I am your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin. I am a psychoanalyst specializing in eating disorders, and I am here to help you break free from body shame, binging, and diets that don't work. I want you to wake up and think about your day, not your diet. If you would like to join me today, the number here is 323-203-0815. That's 323-203-0815. I would love to hear what is on your mind, what is weighing on you, because the real problem with binge eating or any kind of emotional eating, the real problem is not food. The real problem is what's eating at you. And that's what we are here to talk about and resolve. So I have a bunch of questions that I have saved up from listeners. And here is one. If you want to call in, please don't worry about interrupting me. I can always go back to this, and I'm here to talk with you. So first question, what problems do you see arising when just food is the focus of recovery, meaning focusing on not binge eating, focusing on food choices, eating patterns, and so forth? Well, great question. And I have a lot of answers to this one question. First of all, let me start by saying, I don't believe in recovery. Now, before you get worried, I believe in liberation. To me, recovery is something that you are always in. You're in recovery. You're doing recovery. Recovery is like a lifetime sentence. No. Recovery does not have to be a lifetime sentence if we don't do recovery and we talk instead about liberation, which means truly healing your relationship with yourself and food and putting this behind you for good. This does not have to be something that you are battling the rest of your life, a common misconception that I really, really want to forcefully say is untrue. The reality is you can liberate yourself and be completely free. It may seem impossible. You may have struggled with this for years or decades, your entire life. It doesn't matter. I'm here to tell you, liberation can be yours. You can win the battle, win the war, and be done. Okay. So when food is the focus of recovery, the focus is on the wrong thing, because it's not what you are eating or how much you are eating that is the real problem. It's why you are eating it. So when we put the focus on food, it's like saying, well, there's a weed, let me pluck it, without getting to the root and digging out the root so the weed does not come back. If you pluck a weed, what's going to happen? Hey, look, I have the blackest thumb in town, but even I know that if you just pluck a weed, it is going to grow back. You've got to get to that proverbial root, which is very analogous to our minds, because we have aspects of our minds that are hidden in our unconscious. We are in the dark, right? They're underground. It's like underground is in the dark. We don't see the root, but we know it's there because it's creating the weed. We don't maybe think the thought or feel the emotion or the conflict or whatever it is, but we know it's there because it is creating the behavior. When you focus on the behavior, you're just in a place of, like sticking to willpower. So thoughts lead to emotions, which lead to behavior. Focusing on food-related behavior just keeps you focused again on what you're eating instead of why. And the why is often hidden from our awareness, unconscious, but the why is vital. Those are the thoughts or the feelings that are creating the behavior. When you focus on food, I guarantee you, you will be in the diet binge cycle, right? Which just goes over and over and over. And then you're trying not to binge out of willpower. And that's no way to live, right? Living, white knuckling it through life is not good at all. Josh on Instagram is saying maybe there's a specific feeling about food. Well, that's an interesting thought. It's like, what are the associations with food? Often, if we're eating for comfort, we eat foods that we associate with comfort from our past. You know, I know someone whose grandmother always made her peanut butter toast. So she associates peanut butter toast with comfort. And she used to binge on peanut butter toast because that was for her what she associated with comfort. It also went with my food mood formula. She was lonely. Toast bread fills the void. She only had to have smooth peanut butter. So you know what that means. If you're familiar with my food mood formula, smooth and creamy associated with a need for comfort. By the way, if you don't have the food mood formula, head over to the link in my bio in Instagram. If you're on Instagram, if you're listening to this on the radio, then go to my website, drninainc.com, drninainc.com, and you'll be able to download your free food mood formula. It's also in my book, and I talk about it all the time. In fact, I may talk about it momentarily. Okay, so that leads me to another question someone had, which was, how can I get more willpower? Josh, I guess we need to feel the feeling. Yes. But I just want to say something about that. We are taught not to feel feelings. So we're always being told, well, you just need to feel your feelings. But we're not told how to feel our feelings. Like, if you have spent your life trying not to feel feelings, or you're binging or doing other things to distract yourself so you don't feel feelings, how do you just feel feelings? And that's where people say things like, oh, I just got to sit in them, I guess. And again, that always makes me think of, you know, sitting in a dirty bathwater, in a bathtub with dirty bathwater. Ew, ew, ew. No one wants to sit in feelings, and it doesn't help. So how to feel the feelings? First, you identify them. And by the way, that's just the beginning. A lot of people think that identifying their feelings is the same as feeling them. So it's one thing to say, oh, I realized that I was really sad about that. That's identifying it, but it's cognitive. It's in your mind. But saying, oh, I realize I was really sad about that. Oh, and then maybe crying or feeling the sadness in your body. Why are emotions called feelings? Because we feel them in our bodies. Allowing yourself to experience that in your body with words. That's why on page 45 of the Binge Cure, I put these prompts so if you identify a feeling, so here are some prompts, right? You identify the feeling, then you need to express it, and you need to express it with some feeling, with some affect. So here's, you know, the first one is anger, and I'm just gonna randomly pick one. I resent the fact that people are getting slaughtered all over this country by guns, and something has to be done and nothing is being done. Gah! Pisses me off so much. Also makes me sad. So what did I just do? I identified the feeling, but I put it towards a situation with some feeling, right? So it doesn't have to be something in the world, although it can be. It could be, oh my gosh, I am so upset that my teenager is like one surly little miss and just grunts at me and has apparently lost the ability to speak, except when she wants clothes, right? No, I'm just making that up pretty much. But that's what I mean. Like, you just say what it is that is upsetting you, and you go through and you talk, you say everything that is upsetting you with feeling. That way you've identified the feeling and you've expressed it. And then I'm not done. You're not done. Then the next part is reassuring yourself by first validating and acknowledging and then reassuring yourself. That's my very acronym. How do you comfort yourself? You got to vary your response. Validate and acknowledge. Well, of course, I'm upset about the situation in our country with people being shot. That is an upsetting and horrible and frightening and terrible, 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 tragic situation. Who wouldn't be upset by all these shootings? Of course I'm upset. That's the validate and acknowledge. And then is, you know what? People are trying to enact changes, trying to enact gun legislation, maybe paying more attention to mental health. Very important. Things are being done to address the situation. It won't always be this way. Right? So that comforting yourself is a three-part process. Identifying the feeling that you need comfort from, expressing what's going on in your head, and then using vary to soothe yourself in a new way. Otherwise, if you go to food, oh, I'm so upset, ugh, and then you just go to food because it'll take you away from the feeling, it doesn't change anything for good. It doesn't change the way you think. It doesn't change the way you respond to feelings. Josh, again, is saying when the feeling is unconscious, we use food. Yes, that's where the food mood formula comes in. So often we are so fast. We are so good and adept at bypassing the feeling. That's why binging is really like, you know, it's bypass binging. You bypass the feeling and you go to food as the solution. It takes you away from the yuck. Whatever it is that you don't want to feel, it takes you away from it. Sometimes before you reach, it reaches conscious awareness. So if you ever feel like you're being triggered by food and suddenly you just need to eat whatever, use the food mood formula to help you identify what's hidden from you, what you're actually feeling, and that's going to help you a lot. And then you can go through the process of expressing it and then soothing yourself. Is it easy? No, it's not easy to change. No change is ever easy. It is a lot easier to focus on what you're eating than to, you know, respond to yourself in a different way. At first. But eventually it becomes the way that you relate and respond to yourself. It becomes the new way of being. It is hard to do, but it is possible. Jackie on Instagram, I'm very stressed with school, kids, and busy doing things for the house. I can't stop eating Nutella. How to control it? Okay, so Nutella is smooth and creamy. And so a couple things come to mind, Jackie. One is anything smooth and creamy gets associated with a need for comfort. So are you getting enough care yourself? Are you comforting yourself? So what you need is not control, but more comfort. The other thing is you're super, super busy. You're super, super busy. You're doing way a lot. I was going to say way too much, but you know, what can you do about that? You've got school, you've got kids, you've got stuff for the house. Sometimes eating can serve as your me time. It can serve as just that moment for you, just for you. If you're doing things for school, if you're doing things for kids, if you're doing things around the house, you're always doing for others. Sometimes eating is just that moment that you grab for you. So Jackie, I don't know if those two things, if those two ideas resonate with you. I would suggest that you look at new ways of comforting yourself when you feel super stressed, and also find ways to, you know, put the oxygen mask on yourself instead of giving all your oxygen to other people. When we get on a plane, they tell us, hey, parents, put the oxygen mask on yourself if it drops, because you're no good to anyone else if you give your oxygen to your kids or to other people. You've gotta take care of yourself first so that you can be available to other people. And so, Jackie, this is not about controlling Nutella. This is about giving yourself what you really need. Maybe you need some me time, and maybe you need some comfort. So I would suggest that you look at that rather than focus on trying to control it. Which brings me back to the question from the listener. How can I get more willpower, specifically when it comes to food? Right? Whether we call it willpower or control, same, same. So changing behavior is not about willpower. If you don't address the underlying reasons for why you're turning to food, why you're binging, why you're doing anything that is also destructive to you, it is difficult to stop, because willpower only lasts so long. And who wants to live white knuckling it through life? That is no way to live. Better to free yourself. I get to the root and the weeds go away for good. So you have to identify and process the underlying emotions and conflicts that lead to what's going on with food, instead of addressing the behavior itself. So focusing on food, weight, body image, all the things, it takes you away from what you are feeling. It takes you away from what you are thinking. It distracts and it numbs you. And sometimes it expresses what's going on, but you don't realize it. For example, if you're angry and you find yourself having a bunch of chips, and then you're mad at yourself for eating chips, when really you're pissed off at something else. So you've expressed your anger, only it's boomerang back on you. Want to be able to just normalize all feelings, identify what's going on, express what's going on. And when you do that, when you have enough time for yourself, when you take care of yourself, then you don't need food for that purpose. So also look at, what emotions are you protecting yourself from feeling? Remember, binging is a frenemy. It is a friend. It does something for you. It numbs you. It protects you. It distracts you. It rewards you. It does all kinds of things for you. Of course, it also hurts your body, your soul, and your self-esteem. But it does something for you until you find a new way of giving yourself what it does for you. It's really hard to stop. So what is it doing for you? If you reach for food, what problem is this resolving for me? Carly Gash, give me 1 second. Hi, Carly Gash, give me 1 second. What emotions are you protecting from? Anger, sadness, fear, anxiety. Do you need more time for yourself? Are you resenting someone in your life? What are your conflicts in your life? In what areas of your life are you torn or worried? Are there issues with your job, with family, with relationships? These are all things that are eating at you potentially, and they need your attention. Carly Gash, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Dr. Nina.
I cannot hear you, Carly Gash.
Can you hear me?
We have a very bad connection. We have a very bad connection.
Hello?
No, I don't hear. You're breaking up. Maybe call back. Sam is saying to call back. You'll have a better connection.
Okay, I'm calling back.
So, Carly Gash, your voice was breaking up, so just call back, and hopefully it will be a better connection, and we can hear what you have to say. So, again, binging is a way of coping with painful, upsetting emotions and situations. It's also a way of, it could be a way of calming your body. If you're super anxious, sometimes we eat a bunch of carbs so that we sedate ourselves. So we want to be really curious about that. Carly Gash, are you back? Hello?
Yes, I am.
Oh, that's so much better. Okay. What's going on, Carly Gash?
My stomach hurts and I'm so bloated from binging. And I was listening to you how to identify feelings. and then feel them in the body. The good part, when I was binging, I was not beating myself up that much. I was just very, very sad that I'm doing this. And I had this feeling, I wish I knew what's going on.
Okay, let's start. Okay, great. You're curious, not critical. So first of all, let's look at what is painful in your life right now. Sometimes we eat so much, we're in pain, and it's a way of converting emotional pain to physical pain. So Carly Gash, what is the physical pain that you are experiencing right now telling us about your emotional pain? What's hurting you right now?
Well, I'm very angry and I'm very hurt that I have to be a mother to my mother. I unfortunately don't have anyone to help her out, and I have to allocate my time, kind of take care of her needs, teach her, and that's not my job. I'm very angry I have to do this.
Okay.
And we don't have the situation.
Carly Gash, want to do something? Mm-hmm. Want to do a little exercise with me?
Sure.
Not the physical kind, the mental exercise. Let's give your anger a voice and your sadness. I'm just going to randomly pick three from the anger and three from the sadness. And I just want you to say whatever it is that comes to mind, finish the sentence and do it with as much feeling as you can muster. Mm-hmm. I'm frustrated. I'm frustrated that because when finish the sentence.
I'm frustrated that I spent my whole life on survival instead of like doing what I like.
Okay. I resent.
I resent that I have to help my mother. I don't want to do that.
I'm furious.
I'm furious about this whole situation. That I was trapped in unhealthy environment and I had to be among stupid people. And then I learned the wrong stuff and now I'm spending my life on unlearning it and learning the right way.
Okay. I'm hurt.
I'm hurt that it happened to me and that it's not fair.
I'm sad.
I'm sad I cannot do anything about my years of my life, which were wasted on just some useless stuff.
And I'm depressed.
I'm very depressed because I see that it was not that hard to pursue my dreams and it's all doable. I just didn't know back at the time all this information. I'm very depressed I got access to it very late. And I'm not sure if I can make it or it's just late. I am late.
So I just want to give you on Instagram, Jackie is saying, I used to help my mom all the time too. One day I decided to tell her I'm busy. Once I was honest, she became more independent. Jackie, that's great that you set those boundaries. And for most people, that really works well. Unfortunately, Carly Gash has a compromised parent, although a person with a disorder, a mental disorder who in Kazakhstan, who can't function without her, without Carly Gash. So it's complicated. But Carly Gash, in terms of what to do, that is something that maybe you want to think about. What are the boundaries, given your mother's situation, that you can make? That's what to do, and that's great. But first you got to recognize, yes, of course you are upset. Of course you are sad. You have had to give so much to this person whose job it was to take care of you and who didn't. And now you have to take care of the person who didn't take care of you. And that is galling. That is upsetting. Mm-hmm. And that is sad. Of course it is. How could you feel otherwise? And if because of your relationship with her, it delayed you following your own dreams, yeah. But Jackie, thank you for your input. I really appreciate it, and it's great advice. I just wanted to clarify that her situation is a little different. And of course, given that situation, it caused you to put your dreams on hold a little bit. Yes, so upsetting. Of course you feel that way, right? And it's really good that you're expressing it. You're starting to set limits, like what Jackie suggested. You are setting limits. You're not spending 5 hours on the phone with her maybe you used to. You are setting limits. You are taking steps to protect yourself. You are doing things with following your heart, with your ambitions. And both are true. So you're doing a good job of holding setting boundaries while dealing with what you have to do and feeling what of course you feel while you are making mm-hmm. baby step changes. And baby step changes are the only way that we can make changes. No child ever got up and started running. They took baby steps, then they fell, then they get up. But when a baby falls down, do we say, oh my God, the baby fell. Well, the baby's never gonna walk again. No, we say, you could do it, baby, get up. So, encouraging yourself by recognizing how difficult the situation is, that's going to help the pain so that you don't express it by stuffing it until you hurt. And bloating is like, ugh, too much. I think that like that's your body saying, this is too much. This is too much for me.
Mm-hmm. I know. I figured out why it was so hard for me to feel feelings and process them. Now, when you said that the situation is difficult, I thought about it and I understood there was like a critical voice in my head saying that, yeah, but like so many people have even worse situations and they still make it like with worse parents. So I didn't accept that it is hard. It is a hard situation. I didn't accept that. I tried to kind of swipe it quickly under the rug. Yeah.
Minimize.
I didn't acknowledge.
Let me just say something about that, what you just said, which is some other people have it worse. And I hear this a lot. Well, other people have it worse. Well, comparison is the thief of joy. And just because other people have it worse, that doesn't detract from what you are actually experiencing. If you break your arm, let's use it physical terms. If you break your arm and someone else breaks two of their legs, does your arm hurt less because they broke two legs and you only, quote unquote, broke your arm? No, of course not. The same is true of any situation. And let's face it, we can all compare what's going on with ourselves with people in, Africa or in Ukraine who are just struggling to survive in different ways. That doesn't help us at all. It's actually a way of dismissing our reality and dismissing our pain and our anguish and our feelings. What you are going through deserves your attention. Not your condemnation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, I will acknowledge that my situation is hard for me and this is how I feel. And I will validate my feelings. Maybe there are people who have worse conditions and can still pull it out in the worst conditions. But you know, this is me. This is what they've got. This is how fast they can go. You know, and I don't know the whole stories of other people's life, but I know my story. And I'm really doing my best, honestly, as much as I can. And what can
you
I
are
do?
If really it's, and if it's and like when you this. Say, well, other when you say, well, other people can get it together kind of, and they've got worse situations. You don't know what other people are going through. You don't know the kind of support they have. You don't know the kind of what's happening in their lives. You know, sometimes people have a terrible situation, but they've got family around, or they've got in-laws, or they've got people around who are there to help them.
You just
don't know what's going on in someone else's life. So don't presume that somehow there's something wrong with you because you're struggling with your situation. Your situation is not to be compared to that of others. Your situation, it deserves your attention. And you got to take your own side. If a friend of yours was struggling and had a schizophrenic mother who was very difficult, you would not say to that friend, oh, friend, what are you worried about? Other people have schizophrenic mothers or worse and they're okay. Would you? And
I
if
would
you would,
her,
then...
I'm so sorry. No.
Yeah. What would you say? What would you say to them?
I would tell her that I'm so sorry, that it must be very, very hard for her. And I would just tell her that I know that it feels like unbearable, but you know that it's like what you're doing is the right thing. And I know that people don't see it and don't understand it, but I understand it. And people don't understand how hard it is to have somebody compromised nearby, because we have like mirror neurons. Whoever you hang out with, you become them. And I have this very, very vulnerable mind. It's brilliant in a sense, but I'm very susceptible to influence from people. So I need to really watch who I'm talking to. Unfortunately, in the case with my mom, well, it helped to set boundaries and tell her not to say certain things. And I said, Mom, you really need to listen to me and use the certain tone, and you need to drop certain words or certain behaviors. They are very triggering for me. You're like literally killing me, and I cannot bear it anymore. And yesterday, actually, I talked to her for 2 hours and explained. I said, you got used to a very smart, smart daughter. I serve you well. Carly, you don't know how to cook.
Carly, gosh, I want to interrupt you. Listen. You spent 2 hours telling her something that takes 2 minutes. I'm going to suggest to you that she is behaving in a way that keeps you engaged with her, trying to explain things to her, trying to teach her how to treat you. 2 hours, no. 2 minutes, yes. And so really look at how she uses her way of treating you as a way of engaging with you as you spend hours trying to teach her how to treat you. That's no good. Say it in 2 minutes. I don't like the way the tone you use it is unacceptable. If you use that, I'm going to hang up. If you ask me this, like, you got to set boundaries instead of wasting 2 hours of your life trying to teach your mother to be a mother. No. Protect yourself instead of try to teach her. Okay, take your own side. And what you said to this mythical friend, when I said, what would you say to a friend in a similar situation? Say that to yourself.
I would tell her, what would I tell
her? Very
I'd
easy.
I would tell myself, friend, like, you'd better, like, take care of yourself and go get yourself life, because she's not going to change. She's going to always be like a burden on your shoulders, because that's what she wants. Like, I would tell my friend, like, she played you well and she's using you. She knows that you are kind-hearted and you will always come to rescue, and that's the card she's always playing. So get yourself out of the situation and go get yourself life as fast as you can.
I love it. So be a friend to yourself, Carly Gash. You know what to say when you're talking to a friend. make yourself be a friend to you. And you know what you say to your mom? I don't like the tone of your voice. I'm hanging up. You want me, this is what you need to do. I got to go. I'm not going to talk about it for 2 hours. You know, just cut, dry, clean, abrupt. And if you feel mean, just remember that you are breaking a pattern that is detrimental to yourself. Okay? How do you feel now?
I feel more empowered and more in control.
Good. You are empowered and you are in control. You just needed some guidance and some tools.
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome, Carly Gash. Keep being a friend to yourself. You're a great friend. Be a friend to yourself and life's going to get better.
Thank you. I will keep doing it as much as I can. And I will win.
Good job. Let us know how it goes.
Okay. Take care, Dr. Nina. Have a good day.
Bye for now. Bye. Well, you know, fathers and sisters and brothers and aunts and uncles and grandmothers and teachers and coaches all influence us as well. But you still, the oldest psychoanalytic joke in the world is, if it's not one thing, it's your mother. All right. There you have it. No more jokes from me. I promise. Okay. So another question, which is kind of the opposite question. What if you're still dieting and restricting, can you still address the psychological or emotional factors while you're recovering from binge eating? Okay. Look, most everyone who walks into my office, well, now my Zoom room, so I had to give up my office of 16 years. Oh, it was hard. No one wanted to come in. No one wants to come in. Why would they come in when they no longer have to drive 40 minutes to see me for 50 minutes to drive 40 minutes back and pay $10 in parking? I get it. I digress. So look, most people who see me, my patients and my clients, and I also, you know, see people all over the world. I see a lot of people in a lot of different countries who all feel the same thing, which is they are terrified to stop dieting. They're afraid that if they stop dieting, they're just going to lose their minds. They're going to go crazy. They're going to eat the kitchen and never stop. They just don't trust themselves with food. So I never tell anyone they can't diet. I recommend not dieting and I teach you tools to not diet. But if dieting makes you feel safe, then diet for now until you can give up dieting, until you feel safe enough to give it up. And, you know, if you're dieting, which of course leads to binging, then we look at the binge as coming out of deprivation or anticipation of deprivation. Deprivation or anticipation of deprivation does make you want something more, which then leads to binging. And I say, look, I am not taking your eating disorder away from you. Yes, you want me to take it away from you, but no, you don't. Like, people are in conflict because if they could just stop binging, they could stop being bulimic or stop being anorexic, they would stop. But they can't. That's because eating disorders do something for you. They also hurt you. And when we get to what is that purpose and work through what is that purpose, which is, as I've been talking about, often hidden from us, then you can give it up. So I say, hey, you're going to give it up on your own. Once the purpose that this behavior serves is no longer there, you're not going to binge. You won't have to. If you're binging for comfort, for example, and you learn to comfort yourself with words and have that be really powerful and resonant, which may sound impossible, but it is possible, then you don't need food for comfort because you're able to comfort yourself. If you can soothe yourself by being your own best friend to yourself, you don't need food to be your best friend and your worst enemy in one. So When it comes to, you know, not wanting to give up dieting, I really explore, well, what are the fears? What are the fears that are keeping you needing to be on a diet and needing that kind of structure? What we looked at what binging is doing for them. We get to those underlying factors, and that's what works. It is easier to focus on food and stay on a diet than look at what's eating at you. It's easier to focus on weight than focusing on what's weighing on you. And then there's the illusion that losing weight will change your life. And that is the premise that the $60 billion diet industry is based on, right? They want to keep selling us, that's the big lie. They want to sell us the lie that dieting and losing weight is going to change our lives. And it's hard to give up that illusion. So it's hard to give up dieting. It's hard to realize, hey, no one's going to like you better if you're thinner. We're sold this idea that somehow we'll be more likable, we'll be more confident, we'll have more friends, we'll be more fabulous if we just change the number on the scale. And what happens? We change the number on the scale and nothing happens. Nothing is different. We're still us. We're just in thinner bodies. We still feel the same. People still treat us the same way, more or less. So looking at what you hope to achieve when you stop binging is also very important. It usually has some kind of weight loss component to it. If you want to lose weight, fine. I'm not anti losing weight, but I'll tell you, you will lose weight when you stop binging. Staying on a diet, which inevitably, like, you lose weight, you go off the diet, you binge or you overeat or whatever. Diets have, there's so many reasons why diets cause weight gain in the long run. And then the cycle just repeats. You go on a diet, you lose weight, you go off the diet, you gain weight, you go back on the diet. And all the while you hate yourself. You're in a toxic relationship with yourself. And you think that the answer is changing what you're eating. I'm here to tell you the answer is focusing on what's eating at you. Why are you eating? What problem is that solving for you? And working through and giving up the illusion that if you just lose weight, your life's going to be so much better. I once treated someone whose grandmother used to tell her, oh, you have such a pretty face. You have such a pretty face. When you lose weight, men are going to be circled around the block. You are going to be in such demand. And so she always thought she didn't have a boyfriend. She didn't try to have a boyfriend. She didn't have a boyfriend because, you know, of her weight. And if she just lost weight, then boom, somehow that line of men would be magically around the block and she'd be able to choose. So, you know, she ended up losing weight. She lost 100 pounds. And what happened? Nothing happened. A line of men did not magically appear around the block. She had to go and, you know, join Match and join Bumble or, you know, whatever it was then. And date like anyone else. Like, losing weight didn't magically change her life. She didn't feel more confident. She felt good about how she looked in clothes. She was happy that she didn't have to order all her clothes online. Yeah, that was great. But as far as how she felt about herself, and she's proud of herself, of course, but how she essentially felt about herself did not change by losing weight. Losing the ideas she had about herself, her likability and lovability, and creating a new narrative about herself, that's what changed the way she felt about herself. So, okay, more questions. Time for about one more question. These are long questions. Binge eating as a symptom of emotional pain can be complicated as people binge to soothe the pain, but actually it distances them from connecting with emotional needs. So how does avoiding emotional needs perpetuate the binge eating cycle, especially in relation to the subsequent guilt and shame from a binge? Okay, a lot of questions in this question. Great question. let me say that I, you know, as I said, I treat people of all genders and ages, and I see a lot of guys and all backgrounds, all different countries, different areas of the country as a coach. But the one thing they all have in common is difficulty self-soothing. They're often absolutely hideous towards themselves. They are mean to themselves. We got a little taste, pardon the expression, of that when Carly Gash was like, why am I upset? Other people have it worse. Now, that's not the most egregiously horrible thing that she could say to herself, but it's pretty dismissive and mean. Instead of, oh, this is really hard on me and I deserve to take care of myself and protect myself, unfortunately, from my mother and set boundaries that work for me. Instead, she berated herself for even feeling bad about the situation. That's being hard on yourself. You can't simultaneously soothe yourself and be mean to yourself. You can't do both of those things. You can't be mean to yourself, tell yourself a bunch of things about how awful you are, and so push yourself down, and at the same time, elevate yourself back up. Doesn't work. Got to get rid of that mean voice so that you can learn to soothe yourself. People often attack themselves when they need the most understanding and love from themselves and others. So instead of soothing and comforting, they attack or they distract or both. So often we end up binging to avoid our own mean voice, to escape our own mean voice. So when you don't know how to comfort yourself, you don't know how to be with yourself, you don't know how to respond to yourself, food becomes a source of escape, but it's also an abandonment of you. If you are turning to food, figure out what's eating at you. What are you feeling? What are you trying to get away from? What are you trying not to feel? Look at that. Find new ways of expressing it, like I did earlier with Carly Gash. And then validate, acknowledge, and reassure yourself. And be a friend to yourself. If you wouldn't say it to a friend, don't say it to yourself. One of the things that I tell people all the time is to be curious, not critical. I think it was last week I put on my curious, not critical hat, which someone gave to me because I say it so often. When we are critical to ourselves, we're being mean and we're just beating ourselves up and then makes us feel bad. And where's the kitchen? Where's the drive-through? Let me get away from my bad feeling and my mean voice. But when we're curious, oh, what's going on with me? Why do I want to eat that? What problem is that going to solve? When we ask questions, we are more likely to find the answers. And when we find the answers, we know what to do. It's like another way that I put it is that you can't fight an invisible army. You just get beaten up. And the invisible army are all the ideas and the thoughts and the beliefs and the feelings that you don't want to look at, you can't see, but they affect you. Once you turn that invisible army visible, once you make it visible and you see what it is that you're dealing with and what you are fighting, then you can fight back. Then you could say, no, I reject that idea. No, I'm not going to talk to myself that way. No, I deserve better. And so when you treat yourself with compassion, with kindness, and with interest, you feel better, but you still have to look at why you developed this way of responding to yourself and relating to yourself. And then guilt and shame, really quickly. Guilt is about what you are doing or not doing. So guilt sounds like, oh, I feel so bad that I ate those cookies. I feel guilty. Shouldn't have eaten them. Shame is feeling bad about yourself. Shame is, oh, I feel bad about myself. There's something wrong with me that I ate those cookies. See the difference? Guilt is like, okay, feel guilty and you can, you know, work through it. Shame is a sense of that there is something wrong with you, which is unbearable. more about this on a subsequent show. I'm going to talk more about guilt and shame. That is it for the show today. Thank you so much for joining me. And if you want more information and inspiration and tips like you got today, head on over to my Facebook community, Dr. Nina's Food for Thought community, where you get support, understanding, and strategies to change. And again, that's Dr. Nina's Food for Thought community, Outsmart Emotional Eating. We're on Facebook, and I will see you there. Take good care. Stay curious, not critical. Bye for now.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.